It's the Daily Dispatch in discussion with Darren Mann.
The Daily Dispatch in discussion with Darren Mann. And the Democratic Alliance, the DA in the Eastern Cape, believes the provincial government and its legislature should be pushing hard for the devolution of power from the national police to the provincial government to fight growing crime in the province. This comes after crime stats painted a bleak picture in bigger centres of the province, Nelson Mandela Bay, Buffalo City and Mthatha. The crime stats released recently revealed that East London and Mthatha featured in the top 30 police stations in the country with high volumes of serious crimes such as rape, car theft and burglary. DA Provincial Leader Andrew Whitfield in the Eastern Cape, thank you for joining us on the Daily Dispatch in discussion today, Andrew. It's quite a call. You want the devolution from national to provincial as far as police goes.
Good morning, Darren, and good morning to your listeners, and thank you very much. Yeah, a key element of that proposal, which is something that your listeners may be aware that we've been calling for in the Western Cape, is that devolution of policing powers and other functions of the central national state should be devolved to capable and competent provincial and local authorities. We believe that within the mandate of the South African Police Service, there are functions that could remain at a national level, which could largely be administrative, whereas the service delivery components of policing should be devolved to the lowest possible level in order to ensure higher levels of accountability, so that when you elect your public representatives in a city or a provincial government, you can hold them directly responsible for those crime statistics and the lack of performance of the police. At the moment, you have to hold Pretoria, the union buildings, accountable for the failures of the South African Police Service and the rising rates of crime. We believe that that is not a modern approach to policing. We don't believe it is an efficient approach to policing. And to give you one example, we have station commanders at a police station level who are unable to procure a single pencil without going through reams and reams of paperwork, red tape, and protocols through the interminable bureaucracy of the South African government. That is not the best way to be responsive to local crime in local areas where local knowledge is required to deal with it.
Outside of red tape, Andrew, what is contributing in cold hard fact terms to the rise in crime? People are feeling it.
Well, I'm going to make a bold statement, Darren, and I believe that we have a rapidly increasing culture of lawlessness at every level of society. And let's start with the very basics. I don't often see people stopping at a stop street, or even stopping or slowing down when a traffic light is turning from orange to red. And I always say to my wife, just pause and count to three, even when the light turns green, in case a taxi or anybody else shoots through that intersection. And until South Africa has a fundamental shift in our approach to law and order and the rule of law at a very basic level, I don't know that we're going to be able to arrest the bigger picture crime issues such as kidnapping syndicates, etc. It starts at home, it starts in our streets, it starts in our neighborhoods. It requires law-abiding citizens who believe in the rule of law to stand up and to make sure that we put people into office who are going to enforce local bylaws and then the national legislation that governs the South African Police Service. So I believe that we've got a systemic problem in South Africa. When we look at our cabinet of ministers, I always say that if we want to get the crooks off the street, we need to get the criminals out of cabinet. And ultimately, that's what it is. We don't have a good example that has been set by our senior politicians at a national level. We need to have a fundamental change in culture, obviously, but we also need a fundamental change in our government, and we need to vote for a government that actually is committed to restoring law and order at every level of society.
General election, May 29, it's on the way. You're in the Eastern Cape, and partly in terms of getting your election campaign up and running. Is crime going to be one of the issues that you focus on?
Crime is a major issue. I argue often, Darren, that this election on the 29th of May this year is a referendum on crime. I had a meeting yesterday in East London with some people who are involved in trying to assist the Hawks and the police with the kidnapping syndicates that are terrorizing the business fraternity in King Williamstown and East London and other parts of the province. I've met with businesses who are being terrorized by hijacking syndicates. We know that murder is up, sexual assault is up, violent crime across the board is up. And we cannot truly be free in South Africa until we are safe. And that is our message that we're taking out to the voters, that we need to make sure that this election, among other issues, really is about crime. And today I woke up in Mthatha, where I was last year, to meet with the local station commanders here to talk about crime, where we launched a petition, which we're continuing to drive, and it's had an incredible response. People are coming out and really speaking up and looking for hope that they may live in a safer South Africa. And so I believe that crime will be one of the big ticket issues for voters in this election.
You touched on hijacking and kidnapping being one of the hot topics as far as crime goes. It is a massive, massive problem in this part of the world. Thoughts on how to counter that?
Well, we need to fundamentally rebuild our crime intelligence, Darren. We have a crime intelligence that is at war with itself and has been for a number of years. It's become overly politicized over those years. We need to make sure that we rebuild the capacity and rebuild the networks of informants in communities that can provide credible intelligence that can then be referred to the Hawks or to whichever agency that's dealing with a particular category of crime to respond and to respond effectively. Now, I don't know, and I'm still yet to verify this, but we did have a kidnapping task force that was established in the Eastern Cape not so long ago, a team that was sent down from Pretoria, which I was told yesterday has been disbanded. And if that is in fact the case, and I hope to be able to confirm that today, well, then we have a very, very big problem on our hands, because you can't fight the kidnapping syndicates and the hijacking syndicates and organized crime in the Eastern Cape or anywhere else in the country unless you have the most highly trained, specialized skills in forensics and data harvesting and investigations in order to effectively cut the head off the snake. Because if we don't deal with the top tier criminals that are involved in these syndicates by deploying our best and brightest South African police service members, we are going to lose this war. And I fear that there, when it comes to issues like kidnapping, that there is a tremendous amount of underreporting. There's been 132% increase in kidnapping since President Ramaphosa took office in 2018. 132% increase. We're looking at over 12,000 kidnappings a year over the last year. And that number is likely to rise, and it's probably more than what we even imagine due to the underreporting.
Outside of crime, what are the major issues that are going to form part of the Democratic Alliance's election campaign heading into the general election at the end of May?
Well, we've got seven apex priorities that we unpacked at our manifesto launch on the lawns of the Union buildings a couple of weeks ago. A key element of that is safety and security. So we've spoken about crime. Another element which I find fascinating in this election is more than ever before in a national election, voters are interested in local issues. We always say, you know, all politics is local, but more so than ever before, it's about water, sanitation. It's about our road infrastructure. It's about which party has the best plans and track record to prove that their promises they make, they can deliver on in terms of investing in infrastructure to make sure that we're able to grow our economy, create jobs, and then obviously deliver services. A central component as well of our manifesto is our determination to abolish CADA deployment. We believe that the policy of CADA deployment is the genesis of state capture in South Africa, where the ANC has controlled all levers of the state. We've seen state-owned enterprises collapsing into themselves. We've seen government departments unable to render basic services because the wrong people have been promoted and put into positions due to their political allegiance rather than their credentials and their qualifications. We're also talking about how we can reform our education system, Darren. 81% of grade four learners can't read for meaning. We cannot build a future. We cannot build an economy if we continue down this track of poor quality education, deteriorating standards of service delivery from that department. And we aim to focus in on that in order to rebuild our economy and the future of our country by supporting those who can't speak for themselves, who can't vote on election day. And I would call on voters who go to the ballot on election day and when they're standing there to make sure that they vote for a better future and not a better past. The ANC is offering us a better past in this election and telling us all the things that they used to do, but they're failing to deliver a positive vision for the future. And I think that that's what the DA has been able to do through our manifesto launch.
We appreciate you joining us on the Daily Dispatch in discussion today. That's the DA provincial leader, Andrew Whitfield. Have a good day. Enjoy Mthatha. Thanks for your time, Andrew.
Thanks, Darren.
On the subject of the national general elections coming up on the 29th of May, for the first time in the history of general elections in South Africa, independent candidates will now have an opportunity to contest for a seat in the provincial legislature or the National Assembly. And former COPE MP Anele Mda is going to contest the elections as an independent. She joins us now on the Daily Dispatch in discussion. Anele, thanks for your time. You're making history.
Good morning and thank you, Darren, for this opportunity. Indeed, history is being made and it is made right in front of our eyes. This is one of the most important times in the history of our lifetime and also in the history of the maturity of our democracy, because for the first time since the dawn of democracy, we are going to have a rare opportunity that we ought to have long been given, that of ensuring that grassroots people's representatives are able to be elected and be voted for by the people straight to, legislative authorities in the form of provincial parliaments and also the national parliament. So this is an opportunity that for some of us, especially me in particular, it is a witness and a confirmation of the maturing of our democracy and also a significance into how far we are prepared to go as the citizens to ensure that we are not made to be passive people in the democracy of our country.
Anele, now we're all learning about this as we go along. It came about as a result of President Cyril Ramaphosa signing into law last year the Electoral Amendment Bill. And that now allows independent candidates to stand for either provincial legislature, as we said, or the National Assembly. Firstly, are you standing for provincial or the National Assembly?
I'm standing for the National Assembly.
And will your name appear on the ballot paper as an individual, or will it say independent? Will your details be there? We're still learning about this as we go along.
I will be gazetted as an independent candidate, and in the ballot, I will be Anele Mda, because I am not covered by any name of a political party. So my name is that of the representative that I am, which is going to be gazetted to be on the ballot paper.
Now, you need to indicate or demonstrate some level of support in order to get your name on that ballot paper and to be accepted as an independent. Just talk us through those details. What challenges did you have to face?
It was not an easy one at all, Darren, because firstly, as you might know, the Constitutional Court last year, when it handed down the judgment, which was the final order that empowered the IEC to ultimately gazette the new Electoral Act and all its prescriptive guidelines, it required us to have to go and get 1,000 signatures for a region that a person is going to contest as a constituency. And if you're contesting more than just one constituency, it increases that 1,000 to 2,000. So if you're contesting, for instance, 8 provinces because you want to go to national, you have to bring 8,000 signatures. And it was an uphill, because it meant that you had to be on the ground. You had to be somewhat a person that people are either familiar with, or you had to bring a very solid resonating message to the people of South Africa. And I think for me, as much as it was challenging, but I must say that having been a person that has sustained herself as a national and activist, a person who has been continuously consistent in carrying her voice on issues that are pertinent in the country, it was not a difficult one to secure signatures of the people. But I imagine the experiences that I've been encountering with other potential and prospective independent people. It was an uphill, but some of the challenges that myself I experienced were situations where people would say, I am a member of a political party, but I do want to give you my signature. Will it not show to my party that I have signed up for you? So those were other things that needed also displayed that there is some form of electoral education that needs to happen going forward so that people understand some of the fears that they have do not necessarily need them to deny themselves to have to express the meaningful democracy that we live in, regardless of the fact that a person may be affiliated to a party.
I would imagine that when it comes to finances, you face massive challenges as well. As an independent, how are you going to get your message across to the populace? You don't have the budgets that the large parties do.
Absolutely. I do not have the budget, and you are so right. It is a mammoth challenge to secure funds because, as you would know, people these days sustain their businesses through massive state injections through business, doing business with the state, through tenders, through connections, and this, that, and the other. And every single door that a person has been knocking at, people will tell you, have been telling me that, look, we do support and we are sympathetic to your, we are empathetic to your campaign, but we cannot commit resources because we do not know who is looking and we do not know to what extent are you going to be demanded to disclose who funded you, and we may get ourselves having our taps drying up as a result of having shown support to you financially. As a result, up to so far, I'm running a zero budget, which I am dependent on really packaging a solid message through my 10-point plan, which is the issues that I'm advancing as the reason why people should vote for me. And at this point, I'm honestly counting on the message to hit across at the electorate and ensure that I'm able to get an overwhelming support of the people through translation of votes. Because at this point, the campaign is running literally on a zero budget. And I'm reaching areas as I'm starting my campaign trail. I'm reaching areas in some places I'm being invited by communities themselves, and it is on that basis that I'm able to reach far and wide areas of our country. But that is not a deterring factor for me. The state of South Africa requires that we must feel the need for us to sacrifice, Darren, because if it was to be a smooth sailing train, it would not have the effect of why the need is there in the first place. So I'm not demoralized by the challenges that one is facing. I'm rather encouraged because it does inject to me the sense that says this is indeed something that is worth the time for one to have to do, because no one would dare frustrate something that is of no significance to the change that is required in our country.
Anela, now I'm sure that you will accept absolutely every last vote that comes your way, but I'm interested in knowing who particularly are you hoping to appeal to? Which sector of the community? Who are you focusing your message on?
My message is really focused on young people in particular, but the broader society, especially the despondent masses of our country. Young people for one reason and one reason only. It is important for us to reconnect young people or to recultivate and activate the sense of patriotism in young people. No matter how hard it seems things to be, it is important that we re-energize them to understand that you cannot just walk away from the commitment to be an active citizen in your country on the basis of the fact that you have been pushed to the periphery and you have been regarded as a non-starter. It is important that they are brought back into the mainstream, especially because ultimately a South Africa that is taken down to the drain as it is happening right now is a detrimental inheritance to young people who are the ultimate leaders who will preside over the affairs of this country long after some of us are gone. So for me, the message is really ensuring that young people see themselves as through the lenses of our country in whatever state, and through those lenses, they must identify their role that is still so much needed that they must come to the fore and play their role unapologetically, but also the broader society of our country, that is despondent people who feel as though the monster called democracy only came to eat the life out of them, but to also inject energy to some who are beneficiaries. I do want a situation where we recultivate a sense of hope in our people and ensuring that every single citizen see themselves being represented in this democracy through a person who emerges from a grassroots, who is attached and affiliated to no political party.
In doing some research for this interview with you, Anele, I found something very interesting. You're calling for the abolition of tenders so that all deserving entrepreneurs can participate in the economy on merit, you've said.
Yes.
A little more on that. How are we going to sort out the tender problem?
Look, we must imagine South Africa before the tender problem, before the tender system. What was the outlook of South Africa when there was no tenders? Here is a scenario. A South Africa without tenders meant that a Durban who is in Port Elizabeth with a fully registered and compliant business in South Africa had an opportunity like any other person to have a go to any potential business opportunity that may be availed by any state organ using the merit that, one, it is in the industry that their business is focused on, two, they fully have the expertise to do the work that is required. Three, they do have all compliance dots crossed, and all compliance dots ticked, and there is absolutely nothing that is of obstruction negatively to their company to render services to government. It simply meant Durin did not need to have someone inside to hint or leak information for him that there is an opportunity of this nature that you must look out for. I'm going to give you the cost breakdown so that when you do your costing for the tender, you can be closer so that you increase the chances of being appointed. That is not merit. People are not doing business with government on a merit basis. They are doing business with government because they are in the pockets of political elite that is ensuring that they keep the number of financially, of economically exposed people very limited so that the control grip over those people can be excessively hardened in order for them to know, for you to have the lifestyle that you have, you depend on me as a politician. That is not what this democracy was fought for. This democracy was not to be used as a ladder for those who aspire to live a lavish life at the expense of taxpayers. Taxpayers are to encourage every single citizen who is an aspirant entrepreneur to fulfill those aspirations using the very same door that everyone must use. No back doors must be opened on the basis of cronyism, nepotism, and political connection. That must be done. And that's exactly what the tender system is doing. Look at unfinished multi-million projects that these tenderpreneurs get to benefit from government, where they get given money way before they even lift a finger to do any job, because they are secured, because they know the presiding political office bearer in this office where I'm getting a tender is my buddy. So whether I finish that job or not, there is no consequences for me. So it's dealing with two things: removing the cronyism that is embedded in the system that ensures that politicians enrich themselves through taxpayers, because those who put tenders, they also increase prices in order to carry the bribe of politicians. When you remove the tender system, you literally open the door for every single aspiring business person in South Africa to do business with their government, knowing that they are deserving of that because it is their taxes too.
You're clearly a lady of great passion. We wish you all the best in contesting the elections on the 29th of May as an independent. In closing though, Anele, you have a track record in politics, which includes having been a former COPE MP. Prior to joining COPE, you were a member of the ANC Youth League. And I'd be interested in knowing what the reaction from your political colleagues and peers and contemporaries have been to the news that you're going to be contesting as an independent. How have they responded?
Honestly, it has taken most of the people with utmost shock. But more than anything, it has disappointed a lot of people because there's many political parties that have been vying for my signature, both as a member, some inviting me to just literally come and be on their list to Parliament. And I think, obviously, it is informed by one thing and one thing only, knowing that Anele is a woman of her word. I come with my own integrity intact. I've served, as you said, I've served in public office before, and I have no history of any wrongdoing in public office. But I think one of the things that I have observed in many of the my political colleagues, it has been, an expression of support, especially to the old folk, the elderly folk, where people have been like, you know, sometimes, I mean, we've seen it coming, but we never knew that you would be bold enough to do this, to take this move when it took so long for you to be active in any political space. We knew that it was signaling something different, and it doesn't come as a shock that this is the route that you have taken, even though we don't fully support it, but we support the act of patriotism that it demonstrates. And I think for me, that is also a maturity that some people have. And it was obviously a disappointment to so many people that wanted me to join their respective political parties, because they were counting maybe in having to unveil me as their candidate of whatever. But it was not to be, because this is the route I chose.
She's from the Eastern Cape, gender justice activist, businesswoman and politician who is contesting the general election on the 29th of May as an independent candidate. Thank you so much for joining us on the Daily Dispatch in discussion with Darren Mann today. Anele Mda, go well.
That was the Daily Dispatch in discussion with Darren Mann.